Today's presenter is Chad McDowell. Chad joined the West Air Zero West Level 2 team in January 2002. He works with customers to solve problems across the product with major focuses on administrative and web container issues. He currently serves as a technical team lead for the Raleigh based half of the team. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Chad.
Thanks, Elijah. Good morning, everyone. The presentation I'm going to give today is going to be just a high-level overview of WebSphere application server on ZOS. And we'll talk about some of the basic architectural concepts of the application server on ZOS. And the main effort will be to understand why it looks so different from an app server on distributed. So the presentation was authored with an audience in mind of people new to WebSphere on ZOS, but not necessarily on distributed. But the concepts are pretty important for any WebSphere administrator to understand, so it'll at least be a good review for more experienced ZOS guys. So let's move on to slide 2 and talk about the agenda. So we're going to just talk about the two main regions for a server, the controller and the servant region. And we're going to look at the major purposes of those. Then we're going to talk a little bit about scalability for an application server on ZOS, which is a ZOS unique thing. And then we're going to really briefly discuss the adjunct region and the daemon, or the location servers. Okay, slide 3. So first, just a quick sort of one-sentence description of each region here. To give you an idea of some of the unique ZOS characteristics. So like I was saying, the application server is on ZOS is composed of at least two address spaces, at least one controller, well, there will be a single controller, and at least one servant region. You may also have an adjunct region, and there will also be one daemon region that's going to service the cell. So the controller region, in one sentence, is going to be the region that receives requests and distributes work using WLM. The server region is the region that generates responses from client requests, and we'll talk a lot more deeply about that later. The adjunct region is a new region to 6.1, and it's going to be used for servers that are part of a service integration bus. It provides an asynchronous messaging service, and we'll talk briefly about that region later. And the daemon, while it's really not part of a single server, but it provides a location service for a single application server or a group of application servers in a cell on an LPAR, on a, one LPAR. So let's move on to slide 5. And this is just a graphic of a high-level overview of a request flowing through an application server. Just some quick points here. The HTTP request hits a controller, and that's where the controller has direct communication with the client. The controller queues the request to WLM, and it does this by making a WLM enclave, and it packages up the request and all the data associated with the request in an ORB object. The WLM selects the servant to run the request. Servant picks up that request and copies the ORB request over to itself, executes the request, hands it back to the controller, and the controller writes the response to the client. Okay, slide 6. So the controller region, and this is going to be just some general points about the controller region. When you start a server, it's going to be the first address space that starts up, assuming there's no daemon. Assuming there is a daemon already started. If there's not a daemon started, you'll see the daemon start first, actually. So if you're looking at it in an SDS, in your display active panel, for instance, on an SDSF, you'll see the job name is going to be the same as the server-specific short name. So just as an example, I'm going to use DDoS001. Throughout the presentation. That's the default naming convention. The controller region is going to typically consume much less resources than the servant. Default JVM heap for the controller, I think, is 256, and normally, even in a heavy production server, you would expect it to need much more than that for JVM heap. But there is a good deal of native code that runs in the controller, it's going to be nowhere near what's going to run in the server region. So, moving on to slide 7, just talk quickly about some of the primary functions of the controller region. The controller region it opens the main HTTP ports for the server, the secure and non-secure, and it's going to be the region that is actually in direct communication with the client. So, it receives the initial client request, and these are predominantly HTTP requests, and that's what we're going to focus on a lot today is the HTTP request flow through these regions. The control region also has an MBean server that runs within it, and all the JMX ports are opened in this region. The ORB code for validating GIOP and security for IIOP requests happen in the controller. And so these are you could probably technically think of these as part of the EJB container, but they're very important for EJB execution. Moving on to slide 8. This is a graphic showing a high-level overview of the request flow, an HTTP request flow through the control region. So you can just take a look at this, and we're going to talk about that this in a little more detail in the upcoming slides. So moving on to slide 9. So some of the key steps in the controller region HTTP flow here. One thing, when the controller starts up, the worker threads for the controller, and by worker threads, I'm talking about any threads that are going to handle client requests. They all go into this state of waiting on incoming work. And if you're looking at a dump, this will be a method called queue inbound request, I believe. When a new request is received to the control region, the control region just takes that request and packages it up in a single ORB object, and we call this an ORB R. Once that is packaged up, the controller will create WLM enclave, and it queues the work request to WLM for a servant to handle. And the ORB R is made available to the servant region. We'll talk later about how that gets over to the servant region. At this point, the controller region, this is slide 10. At this point, the controller region thread is free to go back and receive new requests. So this is how, for example, 25 worker threads, which is the default number of worker threads in a controller region, is able to handle requests for multiple servant regions, which may add up to more than 25 worker threads. In other words, the controller region thread doesn't wait around for a response from a servant. It goes back to waiting on work. So it's sort of an asynchronous processing between the controller region and the servant region. And then sometime later, the servant region will copy the response data back to the controller region, and from there, the controller region writes the response to the client. So let's move on to slide 11. We'll talk a bit about the MBean server. So an MBean, if you're not familiar with it, is a managed bean. It's the fundamental component of our JMX infrastructure. And the MBean server would then be the agent for MBean operations. So anytime you do a configuration change through the admin console or through WSAdmin, or if you want to start a server, for example, this all triggers an MBean request. The MBean server is a very important part of the infrastructure. Quick note on this, let's move on to slide 12. There's technically, I put the MBean server in a discussion on the control region because it's the most important MBean server. That's where the JMX ports are open, but they're really, an MBean server runs in each servant as well. And actually the MBean server, the servants, do a lot of the MBean execution. But every MBean that runs in the servant is going to have at least a proxy for that MBean in the controller region. So, for example, if you run an MBean server, MBean that's going to execute in the servant, like a let's say a user MBean, one that's created by an application or something, then it's going to have a dynamic proxy in the controller, and so the MBean and the MBean server and the controller actually is going to have every at least a proxy of every MBean running in the server. So let's move on to slide 13. And we'll talk about the servant region. The servant region, it will start after the controller, but it's going to fully initialize before the controller finishes its initialization. In other words, when you start a server, the controller region is going to pop up and start, and then it's going to start all the servants before it actually finishes initialization. If you're looking at an SDSF display active panel, you're going to see that the servant regions will all have a name, will all have the controller region job name plus an S. So using the same naming convention I talked about before, this will be BBOS001S. The servant region is going to almost always consume more resources than the controller region because this is where all the applications execute, all the EJBs execute, for example, a good portion of the MBeans execute. So it's always going to consume more JVM heap and generally going to consume more native storage. Okay, slide 15. So the primary functions of the server region, the primary function of the server region is to generate responses to client requests. And this is done through application execution. So the web container resides in the server region, and that's where all application code is gonna run. All web application code is gonna run. A good portion of the EJB container resides in the server region too, and that's where it's the place where actual EJB execution will take place if an EJB is deployed to the server. Okay, let's move on to slide 15. And this is another high-level graphic showing an HTTP request flow through the server region. So once a WLM selects the servant, the ORB request is copied from the controller to the servant, and the servant actually does this. So you can actually think of, and this is not exactly how it works, but you can actually think of WLM just giving a pointer to the server region, and then the server region copies that ORBR object over to itself. So once the request is received, our container code will actually figure out what the exact app code that's supposed to execute there, and then it's going to let the app code run with it. And then the response is packaged into an appropriate HTTP response and handed back to the controller. Okay, slide 16, and this talks about exactly what I just said, except for a couple of bullets here, and we'll just go over those. So when the server region starts up, all the worker threads are going to initialize and wait for work to be assigned to them. So if you're looking at a dump and you want to know, what are the idle threads here, you'll see all the server region threads will be sitting in remove and process work. It'll be a native method called remove and process work. And it sounds like it should be actually doing work, but actually it is the method that actually kicks off. It goes out and periodically checks for work that needs to be done. But that is an idle method. So if you're looking at a dump and there's no request running, all your worker threads will be sitting in that method. If the worker thread is active, you'll see it. It'll be at or past this. A method called thread dispatch. An HTTP request will be in a method called xmem invoke, and this is in 6.1, by the way. And any IOP requests or requests for EJBs will be in just a method called invoke. So just going over what we just went over in the graphic, the control region creates the WLM enclave, and WLM selects the servant to continue execution of the request. And then the servant thread copies the ORB request data. And then, the ORB request data, again, it contains any of the headers on the request, any of the post data, all that stuff that we need to actually execute the request. So let's move on to slide 17. And this is a continuation of that discussion. The thread dispatches to the appropriate container code, and the container will locate the application code to execute the request. Once the application code is found, if it's not found, the container will actually dispatch to any exception handling code that the application has in place, or use the default exception handling mechanism. And all this is going to generate an HTTP response in any case. So if you're using a servlet as an example, when the incoming HTTP request is in order and the container ensures the servlet exists, we'll just simply call the servlet code directly. And it takes control on the thread, it executes, and it writes data to the client, and that data is not directly written to the client at that point. It's sort of buffered, and then it's going to be written by the controller region later. So moving on to slide 18. Another continuation here. Once that application response is packaged into the HTTP response, like I was saying, the response is copied back to the controller, where a thread will pick up that response and write it directly to the client. So the server region thread goes back to a state of waiting on work, and the request is done at that point as far as the server region is concerned. Okay, slide 19. So I'm sure everybody's asked this question at one time or another. Why do we need this really complex-looking two-address-based architecture on ZOS, as opposed to, a single server or a single process on distributed. And the reason the primary reason is going to be scalability. On ZOS, a single application server can be scaled upwards using the multiple server region functionality. So, and we rely heavily on WLM to allow the scalability. One of the key advantages here is that it's really, really simple to enable multiple server regions. Now, the planning for that may be more complex, but just to enable multiple server regions is like two or three server properties, and you're done. Restart the server. So it's a big advantage over more elaborate scaling mechanisms like clustering servers. By the way, just for reference, the internal variables for this on 6.1 are WLM maximum SR count and WLM minimum SR count, but you normally set these from the admin console. So you don't necessarily need to know those internal property names are, but if you're looking at a job log and you're wondering what you have set there, you can find those in the start of the job log by looking at the maximum SR count and the minimum SR count. Okay, let's move to slide 20. So, and talk a little bit about how multiple server regions work. Multiple server regions, they really just essentially give the JVM or give the server more JVMs to dispatch web container and EJB container work. The server regions are duplicates, which what I mean by that are, or is the all applications that are installed on the server or deployed on the server, they exist in every server region. So you normally and hopefully, if things are working right, you don't have an application stopped on one server region and running on another. So there are properties to configure the server for the minimum and maximum number of server regions. And just to give a sort of a use case example, and this is one we've seen come up every now and then on the support team. Let's say you have an application that requires large HTTP sessions, say 1 to 2 megabytes each, and the workload expectation is for 200 unique clients at any given time. So you would expect, you should expect some 400 megabytes of JVM heap to be consumed just by the HTTP session data. So this is a very large amount of heap to be consumed in a single server region, right? So if you're running the default JVM heap size of 512, it's going to be consumed. It's basically going to take up the entire heap. The other 112 megabytes are going to be probably be consumed by WebSphere itself. And any application work. So a good solution here would be to, you could scale out the server, right? You could also do things like, put a hard cap on the number of sessions or increase the JVM heap to buy you some time. But really the most robust solution is going to be to scale out the server. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to scale it out with multiple server regions. And we've seen that happen a few times on the support team, and this is a very good solution in the short term, right? The long-term solution may be you want to cluster the server, add more, more complete servers, but multiple server regions is certainly a very good solution for this type of problem. So let's move on to slide 21. So how many servants are started? Well, it's configurable. Like I was saying, you could set the minimum and maximum to a number, and if you set those to the same number, they're going to start up immediately whenever you start the server. So if you set it the minimum and maximum to 2, you're going to see 2 server regions pop up in SDSF. If you set a different minimum, a lower minimum than the max. And the maximum you're going to, what you'll see is the server will start up normally and it'll start up the minimum number of servants. And then as the workload ramps up, WLM will start additional servants on an as-needed basis. And it does this by using the responsiveness goals for the server. So, for example, WLM, is going to see that the application server is not meeting certain goals that have been set, and these are responsiveness goals primarily. And it's going to start more server regions up to the maximum configured. Just a quick note on this, and this should be enabled for everybody at this point, really. But dynamic, your system needs to be have dynamic application environments enabled. So, and it's a very old COS APAR back in 1.2, so I'd expect everybody to be able to do. A quick note on this is care should be taken not to set the goals too high for the server, as well as ensuring adequate resources for the LPAR when utilizing multiple server regions. So, as always, you got to plan for it. And also, just a quick note, if you're running a server on a test LPAR, for example, with limited resources, and you're only getting a few requests per minute through, and the requests are just taking a long time, it's probably not going to help to add more server regions. The issue is probably that, it's just a resource-constrained LPAR. Okay. And we had a question in the group chat. And the question is, do you have to have one control region to one server region, or can you have multiple server regions to one control region? And the answer is For a ZOS server, you'll always only have a single control region. So there's always going to be one control region and one server region at least. And so, yeah, I think someone answered the question there, but just to let everybody know. Okay, let's move on to slide 22. HTTP request flow through multiple servants is basically just like it is with a single servant, but there's a the major difference is that WLM now has a decision to make on which servant it chooses. One of the major one of the major points in the decision-making process for WLM is whether or not the request has an existing HTTP session. When I'm talking about this, I'm going to assume there's no session persistence being done on the server. In other words, sessions are being stored in memory. So when this is the case, the sessions aren't going to be shared across the multiple servants, right? You're going to have, if a session is created in servant one, it's not going to be known to servant two. So the most important thing for WLM when it's deciding what servant will service the request is that, you know, the session needs to exist in that servant, right, for the request. And we do this is called session affinity. The basic idea here is to keep routing a request that has a session back to the same servant that initially created the session. Okay, let's move on to slide 23. And we'll go into a little more detail about how session affinity is accomplished. When a new request hits a web container and the application requests a session, just so everybody knows the mechanics here, a session ID is created and assigned to that session. And when the response is sent back, we write a cookie back to the browser. And the browser is going to send that cookie in every time the request hits the server. So our cookie on ZOS looks a little different from distributed, though, because we attach this routing ID to the cookie. And if you look at the last bullet there, it takes this form of the session ID colon the routing information. So that's what the cookie will look like. So let's move on to slide 24. So when a session is created, we use an MVS enqueue to track the session, and WLM is going to use that session ID and the routing information, primarily the routing information on the cookie, in order to figure out what servant it needs to send this request back to. If you don't do this, you're going to see a lot of problems, right? If we did do this, you'd see sessions getting dropped, right? You'd probably see logic errors in the application, the users would probably see, you know, information lost on each request that they weren't expecting. So it'd be a big mess. This is the same mechanism that's used in a cluster, right, if you're routing requests using the HTTP plugin. All right, let's move on to slide 24. And this is just a graphic showing exactly what we talked about here. You can see the request coming in, right, and SID 1, SR 1, dash ID is going to be the cookie. If the browser has cookies disabled, this is a question that came up in the group chat. You're not going to be able to create any sessions. You could use URL rewriting. It's not used a lot anymore. But if you want to make sure that sessions if your application server wants to make sure that you can create sessions in any case, right, you can use URL rewriting. Going back to the graphic here real quick, the cookie coming in is SID1:SR1-ID, right? And that's just an example of what one will look like. The same request flow happens, right? We send the request to WLM. WLM chooses a servant. In this case, it's going to choose the servant where the session data exists. And slide 26, we'll go over that graphic in bullets. So you want to note that in the graphic that WLM queued the request to servant 1 because servant 2 didn't contain the session in memory for SID 1. Okay, slide 27. Some additional functionality with multiple servant regions, and this is a pretty important additional functionality, is this round-robin algorithm that you can turn on. And this is so that, let me just explain the default strategy, and then we can talk about round-robin. The default distribution strategy for a server with multiple servant regions is called hot servant. And what that means is we're going to totally use up one servant as long as that servant has, you know, capability to respond to requests. In other words, if there's any available threads on one servant, we're going to keep using the same servant over and over and over. So this is not entirely desirable for some people, and especially in the use case that I gave earlier, where you're wanting to split HTTP sessions evenly among servant regions, right? So in this case, you'll want to use our round-robin algorithm to distribute the requests. Just to go back to the use case, if you left hot servant on and there are always available threads in one servant, all your sessions are going to get created in the single servant anyway, so it's not really wouldn't really help you at all to enable multiple servant regions. So if you're using round robin, then what's going to happen is new requests coming in, and this only applies for new requests, are going to get round robin to between the servants. So ideally, you get somewhat of an even split between the two servants as far as the number of HTTP sessions that were created. Okay, like I was saying, only new requests are sprayed. Requests with existing sessions must still be dispatched according to their individual affinity. And just a note on that, you can configure the server to ignore affinity. It's not something that most people want to do. But if your server is only wanting to use stateful information for the life of a single request, then you can certainly do that. It's not, again, it's I can't say that I've ever seen that since I've been on the support team, someone actually wanting that. Okay, let's move on to slide 28. And this is going to be a really brief discussion on the adjunct region because it's still very lightly used on ZOS. Most people, we don't have a lot of people that are really interested in using a service integration bus yet. Most people are happy with their existing MQ systems in place rather than moving all their information over to this new service integration bus. But what it does is the adjunct region is just a region that is solely focused on providing this asynchronous messaging service. And a general point on that is, when you start an adjunct region, and it's only going to be started if the server is part of the service integration bus or part of a service integration bus, it'll start at the same time the servant is started for the server. And the job name of the adjunct region, if you're looking at it in SDSF, is going to be the same job name as the control region with an A on the end. So BDOS 001A. Okay, and we'll move on to slide 29. Like I was saying, it's going to be very brief on the adjunct region. there's just not a lot of people that are using it yet. So we had a question in the group chat. Is the adjunct region transparent to the admin when setting up the SID? And the answer is you won't. Yeah, when you select, I think it's a single checkbox you have to give, in your configuration if you're looking at your server in the admin console. And if you select that checkbox and you restart the server, then the adjunct region will start, and you won't need to take any other action besides just normally starting an application server. So hopefully that answers your question. Okay, and we're on slide 29 now. This is just a couple of quick slides about the daemon, or actually two slides about the daemon. The daemon is basically another really specialized region, and it just handles the location service for a cell on an LPAR. This is really important for a lot of our functions in a server, especially EJB invocation. Right, so you can invoke an EJB on one server where the EJB may not be running, and the server's smart enough to use the daemon, locate the EJB, and invoke it remotely. And moving on to slide 30, some general points about the daemon. If there's not a daemon started and you're running a base application server, if you're running a network deployment cell, the first region you start or the first server you start, whether it's the deployment manager and the deployment manager cell or an application server and a base application server, if there's no daemon, it should start the daemon immediately. So you'll see the daemon pop up first if you start a server and it's not already started. Typical job name for the daemon is going to be BBODMNB. So if you're looking at it in SDSF, and that's for a base, or BBODMNC. That's configurable, right? So it may not always be the case. That's the default names. Okay, and that's all for the daemon. It's a very important piece of the application server, but not. Not a lot to it. So, and we're on slide 31. And this is just a summary. So just to go over what we talked about, the Webster application server on ZOS consists of at least two address spaces, right? I mean, it's always going to be at least one controller, or I'm sorry, it's always going to be a single controller and at least one server region. And you'll see at least one daemon in SDSF. Just a quick note about that. You may see multiple daemons, right, if you have more than one cell. You can certainly start up a daemon per cell. The control region is the entry point for requests to the application server. It uses WLM to decide which server should handle the request. So that's basically what we talked about in the control region. The server region is where all the application work is executed, right? And it's going to be the primary engine for responding, for generating responses to client requests. Slide 32. The adjunct region is a specialized address space that allows the server to become part of a service integration bus, right? It's the place where this asynchronous messaging engine runs. And the daemon provides a location service for application servers or a cell on a particular LPAR. And slide 33, some additional Webster product resources. And slide 34, that's the end of the presentation. We can open it up for questions, for any questions, Elijah or Vicki.
And we'll take the first question from Mike Rigby with IBM. Please go ahead.
Hi, Chad. Thanks for a great presentation. Really useful. I'm still trying to understand a little bit more about how requests are spread if you have multiple servant regions and you're not using round robins. I think you mentioned the fact that they would keep going to one region until it ran out of threads, and yet earlier you mentioned that you would use WLM to make sure that if response in a servant region was dropping off, you'd start another one. So would I be correct in saying if you've got the ability to run multiple servants and you've got WLM enabled, WLM would cause new sessions to move to a new region, or did I get that wrong?
No, that's correct. I'm assuming you weren't using any sort of, you'd set some high responsiveness goals for your servant regions, right? WLM, there are more decisions for it to make than my explanation was a little bit simplified. Our strategy is just to keep going to the single server region. But certainly if you set responsiveness goals for the server region or you set some type of transaction class, for the server region, then once WLM sees that it's not meeting those responsiveness goals, it will start sending requests to the other server region. But to go back on your question, the point in the presentation that you were talking about before is actually the decision for WLM to start more server regions. So let's say you have two server regions running, right? And so there's no decision for WLM to start more server regions, but you're just running requests with two server regions. So what Webster is going to do is continue to send requests to the same servant until it doesn't have any available threads, right? And then we'll go ahead and start using the second server region. So if your transaction classes and your responsiveness goals don't dictate it, and there are available threads in the server region, then we're just going to use the same server region over and over. Does that make sense? I know I stumbled through that explanation a little bit.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. It just seems kind of odd to me. That would suggest that if you want to use responsiveness goals, you would set the minimum number of servant regions to just one, because otherwise you'd end up with that one region being completely overloaded, and then the WLM would kick in and start a third one, might be even before they try to use the second one.
That's correct, yep. That's exactly what happens, too, and that's why we put in this option of using round-robin, right? Because the initial idea, I think it was back in version 4 when we first started doing this, the initial idea was so that the server could grow, right, as requests ramped up, right? So you could grow, could become larger, create more JVMs for more requests to run. But it sort of migrated into, why not make it, just have larger capability, right? And what came with that was this round robin algorithm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm with you, and I appreciate your response. Thank you, Chad.
And if there are any additional questions, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. And again, that is star 1. And we will take a question from Devendra Nanda with AT&T. Please go ahead.
Hi, the question I have is about the configuration change through the scripting interface or through the admin console application. You said it's generally trigger an MBean request. Is that same as WebSphere application server behavior on the Linux or Windows environment, or is it different in ZOS?
I believe it's always going to be the same across any of the platforms, right? We're always going to generate an MBean request of some type for a configuration change or any sort of admin command. But as far as how it's handled, it is going to be handled differently on distributed, right? Because or any distributed environment where there's just a single process for the server. Our environment's more complex because of the controller region and server region architecture. So what happens is the MBean request, it hits the controller, right? Just like all requests are going to hit the controller first, and then it's run through the MBean server and the controller, and then if the MBean actually resides in the servant, then the proxy will be invoked in the controller MBean server, and the request is run, in the servant MBean server. Does that answer your question?
Oh yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Sure.
And if there are any additional questions, please press star 1 at this time. and we'll pause for just a moment. If there are no other questions, so I'd like to turn the conference back to Elijah Robertson for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, Vicki. At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the Western Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, my replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Chad, for presenting today.
Okay, thank you.